Let's call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is 1:04 p.m. It's Monday, February 28, 2022. Before we begin, I want to thank Shannon McCain, the House Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Talia Ames from the Juno LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remember committee members and all those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Eastman, Representative Vance, Representative Drummond, Representative Christ Tompkins, my vice chair, Representative Snyder, and myself, Representative Clayman. We have a quorum to conduct business. Our first and only order of business today is House Bill 372, Eliminate Minimum Wage Exemptions, sponsored by Representative Tuck. This is the first hearing of the bill in the House Judiciary Committee. Here to present the bill is Representative Tuck and his staff, Mike Mason. Please come forward, identify yourselves for the record, and you may begin your remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee members, for allowing us to present House Bill 372. I am Representative Chris Tuck from South Central Anchorage, District 23, also known as the Diamond Business District. And with me, joining me, is my staff, Michael Mason. House Bill 72 cleans up an unneeded section of the state law that has not been used since 2018. In 2018, the state of Alaska repealed regulations allowing employers to hire a worker with a physical or mental disability and pay them a subminimum wage. Despite the repeal of the regulation, the section of state law still remains on our books and it still authorizes the payment of subminimum wage. House Bill 372 really seeks to change that. Right now, there's nothing in place to stop future regulations that allow subminimum wages for workers with those disabilities. So that's basically it. I mean, why this bill is important is, work really plays an important role in who we are and what we do, and it really defines our social and economic well-being, and whether you're disabled or you're not disabled. People often find purpose and structure in their work. Many Alaskans with disabilities are actively and productively employed in workplaces throughout Alaska. And paying a subminimum wages to those with physical and mental disabilities is a discriminatory policy. We all should be able to earn what we are worth, with the minimum wage as the floor for compensation rather than the ceiling. Disabled persons in Alaska should never be paid less than other workers based on their perceived capabilities and rather than their demonstrated abilities. And every day in Alaska, persons with disabilities prove those assumptions are wrong. So basically, House Bill 372 acknowledges the value of all Alaskans in the workplace, regardless of any type of disability. And with that, I would like to just present a quote from former Acting Commissioner Greg Cashin, who was commissioner during the time that the regulations was repealed back in 2018. He says,
Before you read that, I'm going to note that Representative Kirk had joined us at 3:06. Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Workers who experience disabilities are valued members of Alaska's workforce. They deserve minimum wage protections as much as any other Alaskan worker. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Did you want your staff to make any presentation?
Here for any questions?
He doesn't seem to want to. We have some. Before we get to questions, I'd like to start with invited testimony. I'll note for the committee that we have four individuals online to provide invited testimony, which we generally limit to 3 minutes each. The first with invited testimony is Miranda Walso, Acting Executive Director for the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. Ms. Walso.
Members of the House Judiciary Committee. For the record, my name is Miranda Walso, and I'm the Acting Executive Director for the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. As the State Developmental Disabilities Council, we work with the community and other state agencies to ensure that people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their families receive the services and supports that they need, as well as participating in the planning and design of those services. Since the federal minimum wage was established in 1938, a special reduced compensation rate was allowed for those with disabilities, known as the subminimum wage, which allowed employers holding a 14C certificate from the United States Department of Labor to pay those with disabilities less than the federal or state minimum wage using worker productivity rates as the sole factor in evaluating the performance of those with disabilities. This is a discriminatory method to determine compensation only for those with disabilities by requiring they measure up to a standard their non-disabled coworkers are not evaluated nor held to. Can you imagine this being an acceptable standard to evaluate an individual on because of their race? Or what if a woman could be paid less solely because she was pregnant or nursing using this method? What if all individuals over the age of 65 had to prove they deserve to earn minimum wage at their job, but younger individuals did not? These scenarios are just as archaic as the provision currently in Alaska statute, which holds to the notion that an individual with a disability does not have the same standing in the job market as their non-disabled peers, regardless of the quality of their work, their talents, gifts, abilities, and skills. This is a position at odds with the federal, state, and local policies that have evolved over decades. In particular, at the federal level, we now see a new understanding through the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, and the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, to name but a few. In Alaska, the Employment First Act requires vocational services be provided to help those with disabilities become gainfully employed at or above the minimum wage. Further, in 2018, the regulations enacting sub-minimum wages for those with disabilities were repealed in Alaska, but the issue remains a concern. We strongly support the repeal of the statutory provision allowing any such regulations to be reintroduced in the future. Not acceptable for public policies to remain in effect which conflict with the basic premise that all those with disabilities are valuable members of society and have the same rights as everyone else to fully participate in all aspects of their lives, including gainful employment and pursuit of economic self-sufficiency. We urge the legislature to move forward with repealing this provision and ensuring the laws of Alaska reflect our values. Thank you for this opportunity to speak with you here today.
Thank you very much. Next for invited testimony, we have Heidi Lieb-Williams, Chair of the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. Ms. Lieb-Williams, are you with us?
I am. Can you hear me?
We can. You're coming in loud and clear. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Okay. Hello. My name is Heidi Lieb-Williams. I am the Chair of the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. Thank you for allowing me to testify today as a national speaker advocate who also experiences multiple disabilities and someone who has broke barriers and represents many avenues, including the National Association for Council of Developmental Disabilities, and as of Saturday, becoming a honoree of the Women's Federation for World Peace for the United States. I would like to submit the following statement from my heart. We all have gifts and talents to offer, and our work is just as valuable as what others bring to the table. We should be paid fairly for our time and knowledge. It is demeaning that someone could just look at a person and judge them on the basis of their disability and offer them less than they are worth. As Alaskans, we are better than that, and this repeal will help us all acknowledge it. How can you be an adult and say that you can judge others based on your automatic perceptions of what someone can't do, rather than teach them how, just like you would train someone else, and have them demonstrate their capabilities to soar to new heights? People often define themselves to have purpose in life by doing work that serves others in the community, by what they are contributing as their daily job. That matters to pay them accordingly for doing things that make a difference to other Alaskans. Again, thank you for this opportunity, as I know you all agree to do what's right today to better the future here in Alaska. We all have a lot to offer each other, and what our gifts are is valuable, and we are all here to make a huge difference in everyone in Alaska's lives. So thank you, and have a blessed day.
Thank you very much. Next for invited testimony, we have Corey Gilmore, from the Chair of the Committee on Community Inclusion, Supports, and Services, Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education.
Yes. Thank you for taking my testimony. Thank you for the opportunity. Yeah, I want to make sure you can hear me okay. My voice is not as, it doesn't carry as well as some other people, so let me know if you can hear me okay.
We hear you loud and clear, but if you could adjust the camera a little bit, you're There we go. Much better. Thank you.
There we go. Okay. So, you know, in 2018, we passed the Developmental Disability Shared Vision. And that vision really changed the way we receive services and said, you have a right to control your life. It's your life, and you can dream big enough to do what you want. And part of that is getting gainful employment. You know, everywhere I go, I get judged based on how I move, the way I talk, and when my staff is with me, and I'm at a restaurant or something, they ask, what would he like to eat? And I always have to remind them, he can tell you. So, can you imagine, like, here I am, I've been to college, I work hard, I do different things, go to a job, and getting some minimum wage is just an insult to my intelligence. And the one thing the two things I have that work the way they're supposed to are my brain and my mouth. And everything else is past its sell-by date, but, you know, it's okay. But I really want to get paid the wage that I've earned for the work that I do. And not have to worry about having some bit of a wage because that's subhuman, which is actually in the statute. It actually says subhuman. Just think about that. I mean, I don't think I have to say much about that. I think I need to let that sink in for a minute. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, for invited testimony, we have Rick Nelson, Chair of the Self-Advocacy and Leadership Committee with the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. Mr. Nelson, if you want to identify yourself and proceed.
I'm the chair of the Self-Advocacy and Leadership Committee for the Council. I have a few words that I have written up ahead of time that will. That my assistant will be reading on my behalf. So, this bill is so important because all our people, no matter their disability, should get paid at least minimum wage to do the same job as the able-bodied peers. Having a law that singles someone out as not deserving the same pay solely because of their disability is dehumanizing. As a person with a disability who has worked hard to have a successful career and earn a master's degree, I feel that it is statute reinforces the misconception that individuals with disabilities are somehow a liability for an employer. Keeping this statute sends the message that Alaska is the land of opportunity only if you are not disabled. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That brings us to, that's all I have on the list for invited testimony, and that brings us to questions from members of the committee. As usual, I'm going to limit committee members to 1 minute per question, and I'll note for the committee that we have one additional individual available to answer questions, and that's Tanya Keith, your program manager for the Wage and Hour Section, Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Questions from the committee. Representative Eastman.
Thank you. All right, so I see the notice went out February of 2018, getting rid of the regulation. So we've had 4 years. have we got some data on from those 4 years to let us know if there's been positives or negatives since we made the regulatory change? What do we know?
And through the chair, thank you, Representative Eastman. We really don't have any data on that, but we know that it hasn't been used during that time period. And actually, I think many of us did not know that this was still on the books. And so if I may, I would like to thank the Governor's Council on Disabilities for bringing this forward. I believe the only reason why I'm running the bill and somebody else isn't is because I happen to have a meeting with them before anyone else had a meeting with them. And so, no data as far as anybody wanting to use those regulations. And prior to that, they hadn't been used for years.
Further questions? Hearing and seeing none. Representative Eastman.
Thanks. Well, I'm curious where we can go to find data that, you know, getting rid of these regulations is a net positive, I guess. Now, obviously, we can point to anecdotes and individuals that say, this helped me, but I'm curious, is there anything we can find as far as the aggregate? Because I'm sure for every mass adoption of policy, there's, you know, some number of people on the edges that really like it, and then there's somebody on the other side. Maybe they are outnumbered and there's only one of them, but I kind of like to know if we can look to another state maybe that's done this recently or even not so recently but has data. I mean, I think that would be helpful in terms of knowing what the impact is going to be.
Through the chair, Mike Mason, staff to Representative Chris Stuck. I'll make an effort to try to get some data for you. There are a few other states that have already taken this measure. There's several states where there is a sub-minimum wage still on the books, so I'll try to get you some data.
Just on that same topic, Ms. Keith, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Could you give us a kind of follow-up? Representative Tuck talked about whether there had been anybody had been utilizing the exception, but can you give us a little bit background from the Department of Labor's perspective on this particular regulation and whether anybody's applying for it or when the last time you had evidence of anyone applying for it?
Yes, my name is Tanya Keith. I'm the Chief of Wage and Hour for Labor Standards and Safety. And this statute, we have not had anyone ask for an exemption on record. I couldn't find one.
When was in the entire time the statute's been in place, there's never been anyone applied to use it?
So typically our records retention would go back 6 years and possibly 10 years, and I could find no evidence that there had ever been an exemption granted.
Hmm. And just follow up, I get to follow up. I don't have to ask permission. Under the statute and regulations, a business entity would need to actually apply for the exemption. They couldn't just apply it automatically. They have to come to the department to get permission.
That is correct. They would have to apply for the exemption, and it would have to be approved by the commissioner.
Okay. Representative Eastman, you've had a couple. I'm just seeing if anybody else has questions. Representative Drummond, I'll keep you in the queue, Representative Eastman.
Chair. Mr. Gilmore testified that the statute says subhuman. Did I hear him correctly? And I'm curious if we can do something about that through this bill.
Representative Tuck or Mr. Mason?
Mike Mason, staff to Rep. Tuck through the chair. So there is no reference to that in the Alaska statute. In doing some research, there were some allusions to that in some of the other statutes that have been in place in other states over the years. And I don't remember an instance where it used that particular word, but I know it's been alluded to in many of the statutes that are on the books in some of the other states.
Thank you.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Now, to go back to the last question, or We have a number of exemptions on the books. I know this is just one of many. How do the other exemptions work? Is it the same way that for any of the exemptions, an employer applies for an exemption and then receives approval and they can't, you know, act on that until they receive that approval?
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Absolutely, Representative. I'll direct these to you unless you need a lifeline.
Okay, then I'll probably go back with Ms. Keith. Just to give you an example of where the commissioner has those authorities, another one is the 40-hour work week. A group of employees could request to have a 4-10 rather than a 5-8 schedule, but the commissioner will only consider that. It still takes commissioner approval. Commissioner can still say no, but to even get to that level of the commissioner considering it, the employees have to basically write a letter or vote or have some sort of communication stating they would like to go to a 4-10 schedule. So that's just another example of where the commissioner has the authority to do this, but it has to be upon application or it has to be upon some sort of demonstration of desire. And I'll turn that over to Ms. Keith.
Ms. Keith, did you have any follow-up on Representative Tuck's response?
Yes, thank you, through the chair. There are some exemptions, or many exemptions. Some of them do require them to submit something to the department or the commissioner prior, as had been spoken to before, such as the flexible work plan to allow someone to work a shift other than 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. But there are some exemptions, such as an individual employed in hand-picking of shrimp, for example, is an exemption that is just allowed to happen without having to request from the department.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. And just wondering about the history of this particular statute. Has this commissioner approval and regulation process, is that how this specific exemption has always been handled in statute, or was there ever a time in statute where this exemption was automatic, like some of the others that are there on the books right now?
Through the chair, thank you. That exemption has always been handled through the regulation that was attached to it. So it has never been an automatic exemption. It has always been tied to approval from the commissioner.
Well,
sure. I know we've got some public testimony, so I'm more than happy to. One more question, and then unless other committee members will take public testimony, if you have more questions after public testimony, you can certainly take those up. But I don't want to make the public wait too long.
Thank
Go
you.
Ahead, Representative.
Chair. And I'm wondering, how does the department sort of keep track of how frequently the automatic exemptions are utilized? Is there a data kept, and do we have an idea? Obviously, this is not an automatic exemption, but for those other exemptions I was looking at the list earlier, do we know how frequently those exemptions are being utilized?
We do not, because that information is not reported to us.
Okay, thank you. That's all.
All right. Representative Snyder, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, hi, Rep. Tuck. With respect to what this bill change is doing, I certainly am wholeheartedly in support of, in terms of removing that language, allowing less than minimum wage for those with physical or mental deficiencies, which is the language used in the statute, which is not necessarily the language we would choose to use. And for me personally, and I'm pretty sure my constituents don't need to see any data one way or the other to know this is an appropriate change to be reflected in statute. So thank you for doing this. My question is more about the language regarding under 18 years of age who are temporarily employed by a nonprofit organization that is exempt under 26 USC 501c3. Can you just speak or give us some insights into that addition, what motivated that, and what the implications might be?
Thank you, and through the chair, Representative Snyder. So that the existing language right now, you already had spoken to it, but I'm going to read the whole paragraph, and then I'll explain what we're doing with this with that provision. So section 23.10.070 one says an individual whose earning capacity is impaired by physical or mental deficiency, age, or injury at the wages and subject to the restrictions and for the period of time that are fixed by the commissioner. So what we're doing is we are putting a parameter around age and adding age back in there. And I'll just give you one example where that might be used. And so anyone under 18, the commissioner can still have a provision to allow for less than minimum wage. And that is for school to work programs or some sort of apprenticeship programs. And so if you have, for example, the King Career Tech Center, if they wanted to be able to get some on-the-job training, we can still utilize that provision to be able to get on-the-job training and actually pay a student a little bit less because they're high school students or because of their age. And in this case, a lot of times there's subsidies to go along with that for those school-to-work programs.
Representative Snyder.
Thank you, RepTech. That's starting to help. And I see on line 8 the specific reference to a nonprofit organization, and then on line 15 specific reference to a learner. I was kind of hearing your explanation here being more relevant to the learner. Can you help me better understand the nonprofit aspect?
Yeah. So through the chair. So a nonprofit aspect would be like Alaska Works. Alaska Works tries to train workers in local communities. For example, if you're going into, say, Kotlik to build a new school, oftentimes, well, let me use the example of Kotzebue, because Kotzebue has the Alaska Training Center up there. So in that case, if you have some students that are wanting to learn some construction experience or get some construction experience, Alaska Works can go in there, hire those local students, but they would be working for a nonprofit rather than working for the construction contractor themselves. And then they would get the exposure they could on the job training. And then hopefully after the job's finished and complete, they become the future maintenance workers for those facilities once everyone's left. So it's just given that opportunity if it should so arise, if it shall arise.
Thank you.
So now we're going to open for public testimony. I'm going to open public testimony on House Bill 372. If you're on the phone, please make sure you're not on a speakerphone, as the sound quality is not as clear and is often difficult to hear what you're saying. And I'm going to start. I know there's one in the room, and I've got one online. Actually, it looks like he's now unavailable. In the room, sir, if you would please come forward, state your name, and looks like Patrick Reinhardt.
Good afternoon. I just landed here in Juneau, and it's been a while since I've been here. My name is Patrick Reinhardt. I used to be the executive director of the Governor's Council for many years. I retired a couple years ago. I'm currently the director of the Alaska Mobility Coalition, and when I saw this bill was up today while I was coming down to do some advocacy on behalf of AMC, I had to come and say something. I want to thank Representative Tuck and his staff for bringing this forward. This is a opportunity to strike something off the books that we don't really need and we don't really support. There's no reason to pay people with disabilities sub-minimum wage. There hasn't been for years. This was kind of set up originally as a federal law, and other states followed suit as an opportunity to basically workshop people with disabilities and pay them less than minimum wage. We don't have those kind of programs anymore in Alaska. We have had them in the past. And it could be that many years ago it has been used. This is typical of like a Goodwill Industries type of program where they have multiple people working in the back room sorting clothes and that type of thing. And they sometimes pay them 30, 80 cents an hour. And it does occur in other states. This is in line with the Employment First Act, as the Governor's Council stated. And I just personally want to thank you guys for taking this up and striking this from the books. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We still don't have anybody online. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to provide public testimony on House Bill 372? Hearing and seeing no one online or in the room, we're going to close public testimony on House Bill 372. And are there any other questions from the committee? Is that a yes, a question, Representative Easton? Mm-hmm. Please proceed. That looked like you weren't 100% sure.
Well, back to the sponsor, if he's still available. And I'm just wondering, why would we want to limit this to just nonprofit organizations?
If I may, through the chair, we don't want people to profit on somebody making less. These are for training opportunities and education opportunities primarily. And so that's the main reason why, is that someone doesn't have an advantage over somebody else. We really don't want workers under the age of 18 to be taken advantage of, but this is for education, training, learning opportunities.
Thank you.
Representative Kirkham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, on that note, Representative Tuck, my wife and I are entrepreneurs. We own a business. Sometimes you bring people in, you have to train them. And pretty much most businesses, unless you're getting somebody from a tailor-made training program that's outside your business, there has to be some kind of in-person training. In fact, the best kind of training, the best kind of teaching, learning, is hands-on learning. Sitting in front of a lecture, you always learn less than when you're doing it. So as I know in the union world, there's a lot of jobs that are you learn by doing. It would seem to me that there's a lot of businesses that teach in the process of the skill that their employees are learning. So I guess I'm kind of wondering if the goal is for that section for nonprofits for learning. It seems like I've seen a lot of that happen more in the for-profit world than the nonprofit world.
And through the chair, thank you, Representative Kirka. This is basically saying that the only time you can go below minimum wage, for example, I don't think there's a single workplace that you don't learn something on the job, or you have to be taking your skills and learn how that particular employer does their work. And so there's always going to be some sort of training. What this is saying is that unless it's for indentureships, apprenticeships, that kind of training where you're just getting exposure to on the job, where you're not really there to make a living, you're there to get exposure, that's the only exceptions that we have for going below minimum wage with this passage of this bill. If you have disabilities of any type, then you should be getting paid at least minimum wage for your work that you perform.
All right, Representative Eastman.
Thanks. I'm not reading it the same way you are, though, because I think we just heard from the testimony earlier that there's other exceptions, handling shrimp, and I think it was one of the ones that was mentioned. So I think there might be another statute. I think this is the way I'm reading it. These are just the regulations-driven, commissioner-approved exceptions, which I think is shorter than the automatic exceptions, which is in another part of statute.
And if I may, through the chair, Representative Eastman, your previous question had to deal with any type of commissioner activities of exemptions. These statutes here are specifically to go below minimum wage. There are other exemptions, whether hours worked, length of hours worked. There's other types where instead of paying full journeyman wages on a Davis-Bacon job, you can pay less than that if they're in a training program or an apprenticeship program. So those were just examples of it, but not specifically to paying below minimum wage.
All right. Oh, Mr. Mason, you want to add to that answer?
I was going to have, if you don't mind, Mike Mason, staff to Rep. Tuck, I was going to have Tamara Keith weigh in on that, because there is a long list, and I bet she's got it right in front of her, of where exemptions are allowed that are in regards to shrimp and the other things that have been mentioned. So I would ask her to weigh in on that, please.
Ethan, I note none of those exceptions appear under statute 23.10.070. You've got the whole statute in front of you, including the proposed amendment to that statute. Ms. Keith, did you want to add anything to this? Oh, her note says she's now offline. This bill is being heard in the Senate at the same time. So, nice try, Mr. Mason, but
I will identify that and get that for the committee.
Yeah, if you could actually get that list and either send it to my office and we'll distribute it to the committee.
I'll do that this afternoon.
But we'll get that to the committee in advance of Wednesday's hearing.
I think that might be 10.50 or thereabouts.
Any further questions? Hearing and seeing none, we will hold the bill for further review. We will now adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is Wednesday, March 2nd at 1 p.m. On Wednesday, we will take up again House Bill 372. And as I mentioned last week, if anyone is considering offering an amendment to House Bill 372, please let our office know and submit them electronically by 5 p.m. on Tuesday, March 1st. It's my intention to take up amendments to House Bill 372 during our meeting on Wednesday and then pass the bill out of committee following final questions and comments. And with that, we will stand adjourned. The time is now 1:40 p.m. Thank you.